Welcome on into the 8 o'clock hour, halfway home with you on a Tuesday. Chris Thomas Turtle with you until 10 o'clock. We'll get back on the phones talking Falcons. Do we need to look at this roster a little more closely than we were at the beginning of the year? Did we overhype this thing a little bit, or is this simple as, nah, Turtle, get the coaches in there and everything will be just fine? If you didn't get a chance to weigh in earlier, we will open the phones back up. But right now, this came out of nowhere, and I was like, oh, got to get Caleb on because I am pulling out my hair right now because Caleb Johnson, Hawks insider for 92.9 The Game, why in the world are the Atlanta Hawks in rumors to potentially be involved in a deal for Anthony Davis, Caleb? He's always hurt. He makes $55 million a year, which will go up to $62 million a year before his contract runs out. And again, Caleb, he never plays. Why on earth would they even consider this?
Yeah, Chris, I feel like this is one of those situations where NBA, you know, oftentimes you will see reports about something according to an NBA executive or according to a general manager amongst the league. And I feel like what ends up happening a lot of the times is conversations are had on a regular basis of, you know, hey, if we were to do this, what would you guys do? And if we were to do this, what would you guys do? You know, just kind of general managers and executives in the league are constantly making phone calls, checking the temperature on different things. And it's pretty standard, especially happens usually around trade deadline time, around the NBA draft time, like all of those sorts of things. This one, Shams reported league sources told ESPN, and he listed three teams, I believe, that were connected to trading for Anthony Davis: the Pistons, the Hawks, and the Raptors. I feel, and this is Caleb's personal opinion, not according to people that I've talked to, I feel as though this is an instance of the Dallas Mavericks would like to get out from underneath Anthony Davis's contract. And what do the Atlanta Hawks have? The Atlanta Hawks have the ability to add a player of Anthony Davis's contract size and trade contracts on their end that would match up and that would keep the Hawks out of the luxury tax area. And as we know, when teams go into the luxury tax, there are restrictions that get placed on them. And so why would the Pistons be going after Anthony Davis? Because they would pray to the basketball gods that he would stay healthy enough to help them contend for a championship right now. Why would the Toronto Raptors want to do this? Because they need a veteran, and they would love to have a quick opportunity at contending, especially after the money they already threw at Brandon Ingram last year. So the reason why the Hawks are getting brought in isn't necessarily because Ansi Salehe is making phone calls over there to Dallas and saying, hey, you know, what if we send you KP and a couple of picks and maybe we throw Luke Kennard in there? You know, like, I feel Hawks fans are going to get their, you know, trade machines going and say, oh, okay, well, you know, let's get some of these pieces that haven't worked out exactly how we want out of here and bring in the potential of what an Anthony Davis could bring. Yeah, I feel like it's far more likely teams are looking at who are the teams available that could make moves that would be, you know, within the rules to make it happen and then could potentially make them better. I just don't know that Anthony Davis would at all be that answer for the Hawks. And to add one more final thing to this, Chris, it doesn't make sense to the thought process that Ansi Salehe has had this entire time of building young, building through the draft, developing talent in the G League, all of those sorts of things. Like, going in on Anthony Davis wouldn't follow that process. And quite honestly, neither would going after Giannis Antetokounmpo, although you could at least make more sense of a why you would go after Giannis than certainly why you would ever think to go after Anthony Davis.
Another guy that could be out there, he's a bit of a headache, but when he plays, he's pretty damn good. Would you take a shot on rehabbing Jonathan Kuminga?
You know, I think I would see what the asking price is, because he has certainly been one that I feel like just needs a change of scenery. Like the Hawks have had that in times past, where guys, hey, you just need to go somewhere else and play, and then, you know, maybe you can turn things around. For Kuminga to get to a point where he's getting, you know, DNP coaches decision type stuff, just feels like it's run its course out there. However, when it comes to having those negotiations of what the Warriors would want in return, I don't think the Hawks ultimately would do that sort of a thing, because I would have to assume that the Warriors want picks, because, you know, they see the days of Steph and Draymond running out, and they've got to start prepping for the future. And I think Kuminga would be a way for them to do that versus, hey, let's throw it in for, you know, for one final run. Not to say that they won't still have that mindset of we want to, you know, obviously continue to improve the current team that we have. I just think it's far more realistic that they would want to use Kuminga, because he was kind of meant to be that future-facing part of the team that he's never really turned into. But still, very solid, I think, could be rotational piece.
Would you, at this point, temper with the rotations greatly, as it's expected now, according to a recent report, that Trey could be back before the end of the month? How would you manage what the Hawks have been doing well? Where does Trey slot back in the starting lineup, and whose minutes get altered because he's coming back?
Yeah, I think, certainly, like, the most obvious of people whose minutes are going to be affected would be Keaton Wallace. I think he would essentially go to not playing at all, which has kind of already happened in a sense, at least if my memory serves me correctly. Like, I just don't, like, he hasn't seen the floor nearly to the same clip that he had earlier in the year. When it was, I mean, you know, sometimes he's playing like 20 minutes, 15 minutes, that sort of thing earlier on. But I would think that Keaton's minutes are going to get affected. Luke Kennard's minutes will get affected. Nikhil, I would expect, would go back to the bench. And I think, I mean, I not to toot my own horn, but man, did I say to start the season, hey, I think you should start Onyeka Okongwu and you should have Kristaps Porzingis come off the bench. And when the Hawks have done that, oh, magically, it looks pretty good, because I think the way that that KP is a offensive centerpiece for that second group to really kind of run everything through, it felt like when Trey was out, so you had Nikhil up with the starters, then when that second unit started to go through, and especially the killer lineup that everyone absolutely despised that included Keaton and Luke and Veet, when those guys got out there, it was like everyone is so used to being passive and like, hey, someone else take the ball, that you didn't have anyone really taking charge and running things. But you've seen that when Kristaps Porzingis came off the bench and had that opportunity. And so I really think that's the direction that this team should go. But it's going to be really fascinating, Chris, because like Trey is going to have to come in and he is going to have to pass more than he has in the past. And he's going to have to be off the ball more than he has in the past, because what the Hawks have found without Trey there has been a far more cohesive. Everyone's sharing the basketball. Everyone's getting a cut. And it's stuff that Trey has said. He's used his words in the past to say he is totally fine with this kind of evolution of the team, I should say. And he's talked about not needing to be the best player on the team. Well, hey, guess what? Jalen Johnson is the best player on this team right now, and I think that will stay being the case even when Trey comes back.
Talking all things Hawks and NBA with our insider here, Caleb Johnson. Make sure you give him a follow on socials at ATLJohnson18. Caleb, I hear everything you just said, but Trey's also playing for a contract. Does that
sure.
Is he going to be able to keep that same mentality, knowing he has potentially $250 million staring him in the face?
That is going to be the $250 million question, Chris, because, like I said, Trey has used his words in the past to say these things. The actions maybe not completely have always lived up to that, but he's certainly, like, I wouldn't go as far as saying, like, Trey's been a deterrent to this team's success. Like, no, he has absolutely been a focal piece and one that they rightfully so have wanted to build around. I just think now that we've seen a healthy Jalen Johnson at this stage of his career and the way that he's developed into this, hey, man, I mean, at any night he could drop a triple-double at this point. Like, Trey has to come back to this and, for the sake of winning, fit in and find where he can continue to make this thing even better, because, like, the Hawks still need Trae Young's offense to be a big part of this. However, if he comes back and there are issues, and then, you know, that's when things start leaking in the media and there are, you know, potential opportunities that, you know, fights can happen or all those sorts of things. Like, that's worst case scenario things that absolutely could happen that you would hopefully want to avoid. And so I think the Hawks have to kind of be prepared for anything. And obviously with the, you know, the thing in mind being that, hey, this all worked successfully and they're competing, trying to reach the Eastern Conference Finals this year. But if not, you've got the trade deadline staring you in the face in a couple of months, and you could certainly, you know, address it that way if you so choose.
I know we've touched on this before, but going back to, you know, even a couple of weeks ago, reading the box scores for Zachary Risacher, it hasn't exactly blown you away. How much of it at this point is he's just not being asked to do a ton at 11 points a game, or are we at all concerned about the fact that he's not putting up big numbers?
Yeah, I mean, I would say there is a level of concern that you certainly, when you draft someone number one overall, there is an idea that you have in your mind of how that player is going to produce. Now, something that you just alluded to there at the start of your question is what he's being asked to do. And it's hard for a young player to build a level of confidence if the minutes they're getting aren't necessarily consistent, or when they are getting minutes, it's like, hey, you're the fourth option on the floor. And that's just not normal for a number one overall pick. So some people take the route of, well, he is that way because they can't trust him to take more of a responsibility, especially because, you know, people are paying attention offensively, because I think the defensive side of the floor has been fine. It's not been as stellar, but I think the two sides play off of each other. And so because he hasn't had more of an offensive championing and been a guy like, you think of an Alex Saar up in Washington, that the team's like, hey, just go and do your thing and we're developing around you. Like, that's just not what's happening with the Atlanta Hawks. For all of those things, though, and I think the big one was that oftentimes he has not been a part of the rotation that closes out games, and that, you know, is a important piece of all of this. And some of the lineups that I think he's been thrown in and not included in are a bit head-scratching. And you go, hey, is this just Quinn Snyder opting for veterans instead of a younger player? Or, you know, like, just what is absolutely going on here? Now, when any time that media has asked about Zach, I think that is some of the times when Quinn has been the testiest, quite honestly, of saying, hey, he's a young guy, you know, he's going to go through ups and downs. And then when you ask about him specifically, it's like, I don't know why we're focusing on one player. We have a bunch of players on this team that we can focus on. And it's like, yeah, coach, but he's the number one overall pick from a year ago. So there's kind of reasons why he's going to get that attention. So I'm not willing to go into the, like, he's been a disappointment this year or that he's having some kind of sophomore slump. I just think there's a lot of circumstances outside of his control, including, you know, an injury to start the season that have made this year a little odd. But I expect he'll come around, and I think even his three-point shooting really has in the last, week plus.
Before I let you go, if you're not a Heat or Magic fan, I don't think a lot of people realize that the NBA Cup is entering its final rounds here. Listen, I get that some of the players still play hard, but just what do you think as somebody who covers the league on a day-in, day-out basis? Like, are they going to try to morph and change this thing to make it more interesting? Are they going to do away with it, or is it just going to be what it is?
They've got to do something, because the biggest storyline that's going to come out of the NBA Cup this year is the fact that the Los Angeles Lakers didn't play on their NBA Cup court because it was too slick, and it was said to be harmful to the players. And so they literally shipped the court back to the company and had them refinish and do it again. Like, that's been the only storyline that has come out of the NBA Cup. There has been zero buzz about it, and I'm disappointed, because I will be the one to say, for the last couple of years, I thought there was something to be said about young teams competing in this event to show, hey, like, we're the next team up. And especially, it was kind of translating, as you saw, clearly, like, the Thunder and then the Pacers be a couple of teams who had competed in the NBA Cup, like in the finals of it, and then went on to play in, like, the actual NBA finals. So I think it projected out some younger talent coming along, obviously with the Hawks success that they had a year ago, ultimately coming up short. Like, there was something to be said about it, but we're now, 3 years into this thing, and it is as disinteresting as it's ever been. So it's time for, it's time for the commissioner to step up and figure out some ideas. I just don't trust that it'll be anything that really catches on, because take a look at what's happening with the All-Star game. I don't think anyone cares about that either.
Caleb, great stuff. We'll chat again soon, and we will not be talking about Anthony Davis to Atlanta anytime soon. I pray that does not happen. See you, my friend.
Agreed, man. Have a good one.
All right, see you. That is Caleb Johnson there. Man, Anthony Davis. Get out of here! Anthony Davis! No! No! It's like, Auntie! No! Auntie! Don't do it, Auntie! No, I know it's tempting. It's a big name. No, no, thank you. Getting Trey back will help, though, for sure. All right, when we get back, one of the studs of this offensive line, Matt Bergeron, stopped by Dukes and Bell earlier, let you hear what he has to say about the state of the team, and we'll get back on the phones at 404-726-0929. It's Chris Thomas tonight. Turtle, with you till 10. No, Anthony Davis. No. No, no, no. I don't want any part of it. If you missed it, appreciate Caleb Johnson, our Hawks insider, stopping by. A rumor from Shams that the Hawks could be one of three teams potentially interested in AD services. No, 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 no. $55 million a year, never plays. No, thank you. That is not what the Hawks need right now, as they are awaiting the return of Trae Young a little bit later this month, according to the most recent update. A guy who has earned his weight, Matthew Bergeron, he's going to get paid by the Falcons if they're smart. He's been one of the better guards in the league since he joined the team, and he happened to stop by Dukes and Bell today. And on Chris Thomas Tonight, I want you to hear that conversation from our stud guard talking with the boys on Dukes and Bell.
I don't know how much Matthew would have gotten in NIL. I mean, what'd you get in Syracuse? You get any coin? You get a car? What'd you get?
I didn't get nothing. I just loved the game. That's all I got.
There it is. See what I'm talking about?
Love the game and friendships. That's
now,
all I got from
let's
college.
Bring him in on this conversation, because I went to Alabama, right, and I've had people ask me, will you pay back into the NIL fund? I'm like, hell no. I did that for free. I don't need to pay anybody else to do the exact same thing I used to do. Now, I don't want to speak for you.
No, no.
But just by the look on your face, I can kind of guess what you maybe feel about that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm all for NIL. I'm all for the guys getting what they deserve.
Sure.
Obviously, it changed the landscape of college football. I'm grateful for my experience in college without NIL, and I feel like it was more about, the actual friendships,
right,
the actual, love of the game and stuff like that. But, everybody get it how they get it, and I respect it.
Yeah.
Matthew Bergeron is with us, guys, doing a great job as well. How you feeling? You healthy? I know you've been like everybody else banged up on this stage. How you feeling?
I mean, I'm feeling good. You know, came back from an injury a few weeks ago, and I've been feeling good. And, you know, just trying to get through the end of the season healthy. I think that's the most important part right now. And, you know, just trying to get back and try and win some games these last four weeks.
Yeah, first of all, I got a million questions. I want to talk about the offense coming up here in a minute. But I haven't talked to you in a couple of years back to when you were a rookie. I had a chance to catch up with you.
And
I asked you, you know, how you were doing adjusting to the heat in the South. It was like during training camp. Obviously,
it
you're
was tough.
Obviously,
right?
you're from. I was gonna say the look on your face that day was like, I'm not adjusting at all. What are you talking about? My gloves are soaked, and I take two pair of cleats to practice every day. But just talk about kind of you know how you feel being a veteran presence now. I can see the way you play with a chip on your shoulder. You play with an attitude, and I can tell you're fully like invested into this life as an Atlanta Falcon.
Right. You know, I mean, I just, first of all, on a football standpoint, obviously being a veteran in this room, you know, it took a lot of growth, you know, for me to get there. And obviously the leadership from Chris and Jake and, you know, Coach Ledford just getting me to where I'm at right now. And there's obviously a lot of room for me to grow, but I feel like I'm very happy where I'm at right now and, you know, kind of my process in these last 3 years. And obviously the goal every year is to get better. And I feel like I'm on that trend and I can keep that trend going. And as far as like off the field, just adjusting to the life in the South and Atlanta, you know, I embrace Atlanta. I'm a big Hawks fan.
Right.
Jalen Johnson, I think his own pace for, you know, all-star appearance. And I'm ruling for MVP at this point.
Let's go. Like, right. Let's go. We all
hoping.
Are.
And, you know, I've never been into baseball until I got to Atlanta. And, you know, I've been going to a few of the Braves games and stuff like that. So it's been great. You know, I just love the city of Atlanta as far as the food, the people. And I just love it. It's kind of, you know, I'm from Canada, so I feel like Atlanta kind of adopted me in a certain way.
We just love your energy and, you know, a little swagger and attitude, not to blow smoke, but we always had fun talking to you.
Yeah.
And that's right. Expos were long gone when you were a kid up there in Quebec.
Never really watched baseball, but I love going down to the Battery. Love going down to the Truist Park, and it's just great. It's just a great atmosphere, and you know we're always down there, so it's just great.
And we had high hopes for the playoffs, so we can totally talk more Hawks right now with you, Matthew.
Yeah, I mean, let's do it.
How do you feel now? The key is for me is how does Quinn Snyder get Trey in sync in the half court with all the good things that are happening in his absence?
There's a lot of talks about the fans saying where do you know Trey fit in? I feel like. If we know we're at a great spot right now, well, Trey can only make us better. You know, obviously on defense, it might be some struggles, you know, with Trey based off his height and, you know, his limitation, you know, on defense. But I feel like, you know, you can overcompensate with the height of Porzingis, you know, down there. And, hopefully they can make it happen. I'm definitely rooting for him. I've been going to a lot of the games and, yeah.
Look at this guy, Mike. I mean, this guy might be taking our job.
Yeah. It's not ESPN. It's TSN.
It's TSN in Canada.
Oh, man. Look, we'll get into more Hawks in a minute. Maybe some Formula One.
We'll get into all this stuff. Fix my New York Rangers. Go ahead.
I do want to talk about the Falcons. I don't know if you caught this comment. There was somebody asked Kirk Cousins a question today about does somebody need to throw a chair across the locker room after a win like that? You know, who's bringing the attitude in these situations? I think that we have always kind of looked at you. You're the guy, you know, the first guy down the field helping Bijan off the ground.
Yeah.
Drake London obviously has that edge, but without him in the lineup, you seem to be the tone setter. Mm-hmm. Do you take pride in that? Is that something you've always done at all levels of football? And how have you kind of developed that role inside of this locker room?
I just feel like I always played with a chip on my shoulder. Like I said, we talked earlier, you know, me being from Canada, only having one offer, kind of just showed up one day at a camp and just got an offer from Syracuse. So I always played with that chip on my shoulder, trying to, you know, prove myself. And I feel like I'm still doing it. And I feel like the day I'm going to playing that way is the day I'm gonna retire, and you know, hopefully I can keep, you know, going. But there's obviously guys in the locker room, like, you know, guys like Tyler, guys like Drake, who they just have that edge, whether, you know, we're up by 30, we're down by 30, they're gonna play the same way. And you know, when I came here, those were the guys I looked up, you know, I looked up to. And hopefully one day, you know, the younger guys can look up to me in that same way.
Absolutely.
That makes sense.
Well, it's just tough. We said earlier, as Matthew Bergeron's live inside the Ticketmaster studios here on 92.9. It's a little bit of human nature. I mean, you know, you might be doing your job. Sometimes it's just, here we go again. You know, how do you maintain that intensity?
I mean, you have to. And the guys in the locker room have to be, you know, the leadership has to be the tone setter, like you said. Like, you know, we might be out of playoffs, but, you know, we got to keep fighting. And, you know, at this point, you know, we're playing for pride and just we're playing for each other as well. You know what I mean? So I'm not going to go out there and let, you know, Chris and Jake, you know, Chris and AJ never been to the postseason. Like, you know what I mean? So I'm going to try and fight for those guys and trying to get them, you you know, get those guys to that level at one day. But it starts right now, and it starts by, you know, playing hard and, you know, playing every snap like it's your last.
Well, let's dive into a little bit more X's and O's. And obviously, a lot's made about the run game, wide zone scheme. You fit in perfectly with what, you know, Coach Ledford wants to do here and what Lindstrom has done before you, and climbing to the second level, the communication with Jake, it's all been great. I have noticed a couple of times, and this was brought up to Lindstrom last week when he was sitting here, there's been a little bit more gap scheme. Seems like a couple of counter plays where Chris Lindstrom's pulling. Yeah. Are you comfortable as a puller? Is it something you enjoy? And what have you made of some of these small nuance and changes in the offense over the last few weeks?
Obviously, you have to adjust, but, you know, I love pulling. Yeah. I think it's great. And like I said, you got to have that edge when you come out and pull, because they're going to meet you.
Mean business, Mike. He goes around there meaning business.
Right. No, and then they're going to meet you with that intent of ascend the edge, you know what I mean? So, you know, I've loved it. And like you said, you know, we talk about baseball earlier, like you got to have your switch up, you know what I mean? Like you have your reliable runs, like which is the wide zone, but you got to be able to come out and throw some difference, something different, you know, to keep them honest.
The Buccaneers, and we had some great, because last year was two of the most entertaining games of all time.
Oh,
the comeback on Thursday night, I thought the most complete game last season was the game down in Tampa, which was something. And so it's a little more juice with a division rival, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, fans go, whatever. Yeah. But there's a little more juice with something like this.
NFC South, man. Like, every game in the NFC South is, you know, juiced up. You know, the guys are talking, you know, we've played each other for a long – you know, we've played against each other for a long time. They know us. We know them. It's – who can do their job at the highest level, and it's going to be a dogfight.
How do you feel about playing outdoors? You know, you're a guy, obviously, Syracuse guy, indoors. You come down here, Mercedes-Benz, great facility.
No doubt.
But it is different when you play outside. Tampa's one of those places you get that opportunity.
Oh,
even this year going up to Minnesota, right? Some of the other things. I always thought it was fun. It reminded me of backyard football when you go from playing in the dome to playing outside. You have that opportunity again this weekend.
I actually love playing on grass. Yeah. I think it's smoother, you know, in your kick step. Like, you just slide better.
Great
point.
You just glide out there.
So I love playing in grass, and I actually love playing in Tampa. Like, the atmosphere is always great. And, you know, we're going to have the throwback uniforms. They're going to have the
Creamsicle, Bucking the Bruce.
I feel like it's just like a classic, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, it's a Thursday night classic, and it's going to be a dogfight. It's going to be physical, so I think it's definitely a game I look forward to.
All right, before we get out of here, he likes NASCAR. We like NASCAR too, but
I've started watching NASCAR.
Got
so
dabble.
I went to Homestead.
Nice.
April or May for the first time, my first NASCAR race. It was incredible. And then I went to Atlanta where they came down here, and it was great. It was great.
Yeah, we were talking about being on pit. There was a Bergeron sighting on pit road.
Yeah.
We heard you around. But real quick, because we're big F1 guys, and you were down there in Miami.
Yeah.
What do you think of Lando Norris, a guy with a Star Wars character name, winning the championship? My boy Piastri, I thought they did him dirty at McLaren. Listen, but anyway, what do you think of how the championship played?
I'm a Red Bull fan ever since I came into Formula
Max
One.
Max was on fire down the stretch.
I'm a Max Verstappen fan, and, you know, it was obviously a heartbreaking situation, but I feel like Max won the heart of the fans of the F1.
Check that out.
I feel like he was the villain in the past, you know, with the whole situation with Lewis, but I feel like he won the heart of the Formula One fans. So it was a title to sacrifice for the heart of the fans, but I do think you know, Lando, you know, he drove great. They had a great car all year, all around. They were the most complete team all around. But I feel like Red Bull did, you know, make a great push in the second half of the season. But like I was telling Chris earlier, like every point mattered in Formula One. I feel like early in the season, Max thought it was over a little too quick, so he threw away some of the points.
And he don't get support from his teammate, unfortunately.
No doubt. Yeah.
You know, it's a team sport.
That's tough. It is tough. So, yeah.
That's a great point. What he just, for the guys who don't follow F1, Max beats Lewis in a very controversial race 4 years ago, goes on to win four in a row. I'm with you. I found myself rooting for Max
down
the stretch because it was like, wow.
Yeah,
and now next year he gets a new partner. We'll see what Hadrick can do.
Man, he said he's a Red Bull fan. Look, I'm a big I've actually – my allegiance to NASCAR, Shane Van Gisbergen, so he's a Red Bull guy on the NASCAR side of things. There's room on the bandwagon if you want to jump in.
Just for Black Jingles next year, I love getting on the ground floor. We're going to try to get Valtteri Bottas because I'm going to jump on Cadillac next year as a newbie. I know they're going to stink.
They're American team.
American, baby.
Got to. Homegrown. I love it, man.
Well, hey, man, before we leave, have a joyous Noël.
Yes, sir. Hey, merci. Merci beaucoup.
Merci beaucoup, bien, mon ami. See, I know we work some French in there. That's our guy, man. Thanks again. We always love catching up with you, and best of luck down the stretch.
Yes, sir. Appreciate you guys. Have a good day.
Always good stuff there from Matt Bergeron. Fun fact, Arn, the first Falcon I ever got to interview one-on-one was Matt Bergeron at training camp a couple of years ago. Yes, he did, as a matter of fact. I'm pretty sure Matt Bergeron has set the record for most curses on 92.9 The Game by a single athlete.
By this time, I would think that he knows that we're not satellite radio.
Orin, I think it's a different tact. I don't think the dude gives a crap.
Probably not.
I really don't think he does.
Hey, y'all asked me for the interview, so.
Yeah, exactly. He's like, you're on my turf now, there you go. Bro. All right, when we get back, Producer O has six questions for me. Four sports and two of any kind. We'll also take more of your calls at 404-726-0929. Is the Falcons roster overhyped, or do they just simply need a coaching change? If you couldn't get through before, you can call in now, 404-726-0929. Is this Falcons roster overhyped, or do they just need a coaching change? That plus a producer six-pack is next. Before we get into a producer six-pack, Chris Thomas tonight, Turtle, with you until 10 o'clock. Oh, did you see who was announced as the Time Athlete of the Year?
I did.
Interesting.
Good for him.
I think you mean her.
Oh, I'm sorry. AP was Shohei. My bad.
I think you mean her.
My apologies to her. Shohei won the AP. I assume Shohei was the Time magazine. That is my bad.
The Time Athlete of the Year, WNBA star
Asia
Wilson.
Asia's had a hell of a she's had a hell of a last couple of years.
So she is now a four-time league MVP and a three-time champion.
It's almost like her numbers every year get better, but the Aces are asking her. I think the Aces are asking her to do more and more every year this year. I saw her a couple times this year, just. Run roughshod over the Dream. Just
and they,
win ball games by themselves.
They
by
were
herself.
Terrible to start the year. Right?
They were very bad. Yes,
and then
they had like a 13 or 14 game win streak at some point during the season.
And then they completely turned it around. They Kelsey Plum's not in the mix anymore. She's
no,
in LA.
She's in LA with the Sparks.
She's in LA, so it's really Asia's team, and she's completely taken over. And it's pretty cool to see. She's quickly becoming one of the more dominant female athletes of this generation.
She spoke, I saw a quote from her today about she's ready to start a family, or she really, really wants to start a family with her beau, her Bam Adebayo, her man. And to think about what those children athletically are going to be.
Did you ever hear Kendrick Perkins pronounce Bam Adebayo? I wish I'd thought of this in the break. I would have asked you to, but he goes, Bam Adebayo.
Yeah, just added an extra syllable there.
He made him from Louisiana.
Yeah, he did. Added the bayou.
Bam out of the bayou.
Bam out of the bayou. Yes.
It's what Perk is good for, a couple of those every single season, and that was one of his best ones. Is there a larger conversation here, Orin, about the state of the W right now? Because they're in the middle of this. For those who don't know, the WNBA is essentially fighting for their lives here, because if you don't understand how, listen, they don't make anywhere near as much money as the NBA. We're saying that on the front. But they make as much money as, like, kindergarten teacher salaries.
If you are a star player in the WNBA, you're making your money, the majority of your money, off endorsements. Like, Angel Reese even talked about that, too. Her WNBA salary couldn't pay the rent that she was living in her apartment in. But everything else that she did on top of that. And that's why you see so many WNBA stars, too. They just don't play here in the States.
They play overseas.
They
got
to go play overseas in the offseason to get that money.
Well, now they have a couple of leagues that are starting here in the U.S.
Yeah, Unrivaled.
Unrivaled, right. And some
of
the bigger,
actually stake. Yeah, you have a stake in the league.
And some of the bigger stars in the WNBA are attaching their name to the project. But, Orin, the WNBA, they are like, they're like, can we get $1 million a year?
Well, that's the new thing now. I saw with the latest CBA is that the Players Association is proposing that, I guess, the top tier of WNBA athletes or WNBA stars will get $1 million. The league and the ratings everything's rising exponentially right now.
Just for reference, Anthony Davis makes almost $1 million a game. He gets paid $55 million a year.
Yeah, Jokic
so he
makes
gets what,
close to $1 million a game.
$750,000 a game check?
That's ridiculous, yes.
For one game.
We are very close in the NBA now, probably within, I would say, like 3 or 4 contract cycles with TV money coming in. We are very much on the verge of seeing, you know what? It might even be Wemby. Wemby might become
If he stays healthy.
If he stays healthy, Wimby might become the first $1 million a game NBA player.
Oh, easily. Yeah, it could easily, especially because he's a – and think about all the extra money he brings in from being a multicultural athlete.
Just the timing of it, I think, it lines up to where in another couple of years – or not a couple of years, after he gets out that – maybe that rookie max deal or whatever, his second big contract, I think he'll be the first to achieve the $1 million per game average.
It's pretty crazy to think because the WNBA has gained so much popularity over the last couple
of
years.
All this TV money they have now, you see games on ESPN, on ION, like the games are
all over the place. But it seems like all the execs are still claiming poverty. I don't know if it's true. I have no idea.
I think on their part there's a fear, and I'm not saying this is right or wrong, there's a fear that they don't want to put the cart before the horse and rapidly expand this thing and then end up in a place in a couple of years where everything is unsustainable. I think that's what their fear is right now.
I mean, we have this money.
They want to grow it, I think, at a much smaller rate than what the players and the Players Association wants to do right now.
So I'm no – listen, I'm not going to sit here and BS anybody. Y'all know I don't do this on the show. I just find these negotiations fascinating because, you know, I know – about as many young WNBA stars as I think the average sports fan does. Obviously, we're talking about Asia Wilson, Caitlin Clark, we know the phenom she is, Angel Reese, there's Cameron Brink.
Paige Beckers.
And they all have commercials and stuff now, by the way. You see them all over.
They're getting their own signature shoes.
So
I got a couple pairs of Sabrina's at the house.
Really?
Yeah.
She's another one, too. She was sort of the Caitlin Clark before Caitlin Clark.
Mm-hmm.
Except she wasn't controversial. For whatever reason, she was not controversial. Caitlin Clark comes with all this baggage and all this controversy.
She's got a pair of she's doing like the Kobe line, so there's a pair of Caitlin Clarks, a couple pairs of Caitlin Clarks that I really wish I had my hands on.
And there's some other ones that have broken out too. Like I love DeJounte Carrington. I think she's great.
The way you said that just now, Chris. With that glisten in your eyes, sir. We won't talk about that.
She's great. What can I say? She's a great player.
Looking out longingly in the space there.
Yeah, she's a great player with a fun personality.
How about here in Atlanta with Brittany Griner and company?
Brittany Griner. You got
Ryan Howard.
You got Ryan Howard. You got Alicia Gray, who is like the best. Like, if you love just a good, like, middle America, like, homegrown athlete to root for, Alicia Gray is like, that's your player right there.
There you go.
She goes out there and she scores 20 a night. You don't hear a peep from her.
Very workmanlike.
Yeah, very almost, I'm trying to think of a comp in the NBA. Someone that just goes out there and does their job and does it really well and is not a Tim Duncan-ish.
Isaiah Hartenstein.
There you go. Isaiah Hartenstein. Former Nick great, now with the champion.
By the way,
Oklahoma City Thunder.
That's a question I'm not going to have on the list here, but
we'll get to that coming up at 9 o'clock. By the way, we ran over with this.
Should we start talking about the Thunder in the number 74?
No, not yet.
Not yet.
It's just too early. Like, can they? Yes.
Just saying, 21-22-1
they still have 70% of the season left?
They do. It's just when you start to have these kind of starts where you look so good. And I mean, I'll say this. The Celtics last year had a very, very hot start to the season. And I think I may even ask you about, like, could they get to a certain number of wins based on where they started during the season? Just on how good they look and how they were blowing teams out. Back to Earth a little bit. I guess just that's the natural sort of inclination when you see what OKC is doing right
now. It's the equivalent of talking about a no-hitter in like the fourth inning.
That's very true.
That's just where they are. And it's not because you don't think the pitcher can do it. It's just because that's just where they are.
And it's tough, too, with those guys because, like, you see, one, the level of talent they have. Two, like, the chemistry. I saw it was some NBA analyst was talking about, like, they all like each other. They genuinely enjoy playing together.
If you look at SGA stats in the fourth quarter, they're almost non-existent because he doesn't play. Because their average margin of victory is like NBA record all-time great.
And he averages like close to 30 4 points a game.
Essentially, and playing like three quarters.
Yeah. By the way, his numbers are to be as prolific. I'm gonna say prolific, but he's a he's a heat shooter, kind of rhythm kind of guy. But he shoots like over 50% from the field, and he averages 33 points per game. Like that's extremely efficient high level scorer, which KD, LeBron, guys like that, Jordan, they have to shoot the ball a whole lot to do a whole lot in the game.
Well, the thing is, like, about OKC, what's so impressive is they're just a complete team.
Yeah, from A to Z.
From A to, like, they have no weakness.
No.
They can do everything. They have bigs who can defend, guard the post, finish. You have
everything, man.
Obviously, your backcourt is elite. And then you just have eight role players
that depth, man.
Between the starters and the bench
the
that you
fact
just
that
roll
they stole
out.
Alex Caruso, man. Like they stole Alex Caruso. Like the guy who you couldn't afford to put on that team because he fits so well. Alex Caruso's on that team balling out, man.
What if they trade for Giannis?
They got the assets.
Yes, they do.
I mean, the worry at this point with that team, the worry I would have would be, would bringing in a guy like Giannis disrupt chemistry? Like, the chemistry for them is so sound right now. And these guys have played together so long.
You know why I say no, O, to that? Because Giannis gets it. He gets it.
Giannis, he'll fit in with him? Here's why.
Giannis, unlike a Jimmy Butler, is a legacy guy. Giannis has centered himself around the fact that he has a chance to build an NBA all-time legacy. And he knows, and he's a smart enough player to know, he needs a couple more rings. So I think if he found himself in a situation like that, he'd play ball. Like, that's SGA's team. That wouldn't be Giannis's team.
By the way,
if he went there.
Tonight, there's a guy playing on television. Because the Pelicans right now are, 3-0? God awful right now. Their record is the Wizards and the Pacers are all just the worst teams right now in the NBA. There's a guy playing on TV right now, AJ DeBanza, who has balled out tonight versus Clemson.
Got the game on in here in the studio. It's going to be him and it's going to be Boozer from Duke.
And the kid out of Kansas, too.
Yes, number 22. What's
Darren
his last
Peterson.
Name? Yeah, Darren Peterson. There you go. Those are going to be who needs Deshaun Tator? And we got you covered on all things college basketball.
Triple dribble, shoot. That's us right now.
All right. When we get back, we will get to a producer six pack. We got wrapped up in some WNBA and NBA talk. Some interesting stuff going on right now. But back to a six pack. Joe Patrick will stop by, and we'll hear from Raheem Morris in the final hour as well. Busy Tuesday night show. Chris Thomas tonight.